even an idea that might not fly should inspire you in some way to go in a direction or to think of something new. So point out how that's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, be very open about how somebody's idea has helped to shape your thinking, right? You're actually, what you're doing is you're creating a safe space for people to share their ideas. And that is like probably a number one most important thing, is that people feel safe and comfortable to share their ideas.
Otherwise they won't.
Otherwise they will not.
And you'll miss the opportunity, right?
This is the Leadership Communication Show, a podcast to help people like you be the inspiring and influential leaders their people need. I'm Michael Paperno, and I'm a communication expert, teacher, and coach. My personal mission is to help good leaders be great leaders through the power of communication. I promise you'll learn something from each guest on this show that will help you along your personal leadership journey. Okay, on with the show. Today's conversation is with my colleague and friend, Dan Nessel. Dan's a communicator, storyteller, marketer, team leader, and a former teacher, which is something we share in our career paths. He's a creator, and he writes, and he podcasts, and he's a seasoned marketer and leader who currently leads communications for Lixil Americas, a company that makes water and housing products you likely have in your home or office right now. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Well, thanks for having me, Michael. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too. I'm glad you're here. I invited Dan to be on the show today because his passion for communications and creativity are very much aligned with mine. We've had some great conversations over the past year or so, so I thought a conversation with him about leading creative teams would be fun. Dan, let's start by having you tell us a little bit about your background. What's your story up until now?
Yeah, I'm happy to start. Thanks for the introduction, Michael. I mean, you know, I think you've said a lot of what I often talk about when I'm introducing myself. I'm a marketer and a communicator, and you know, I've gone through this creative journey and I lead creative teams. But just to break it down, I think a little bit for that standard, almost like kind of verbal resume that I think people expect on these kind of our conversations. Mm-hmm. I started out, you know, I came out of college and went straight to Japan, right? So I started off as a Japan person. And that's where the teaching comes in. I start off teaching English in Japan, as a lot of people, I guess, who were kind of globetrotters, you know, back in the 90s were doing that around the world, right? And, mm-hmm. You know, to be honest, when I graduated from school and started doing that, I had no idea where the career would go. I wasn't career minded. I was just experience minded, I suppose, at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, through the vagaries of life and through, you know, various connections that I kept making along the way, I went from teaching in a rural environment. I ended up staying in Japan and then moved to teaching or running educational programs around Tokyo at some private universities, all around the English language. You know, nothing. I'm certainly no physicist or chemist or biologist or anything important. It was all about, you know, all about English language learning. Not to denigrate English language learning, by the way. But you know, after that, I wanted to get out of education. So I moved into, I tried to seek my fame and fortune in business, whatever that business thing means. And I went into recruiting for a little while. And, you know, look, all along the way, I always felt a creative tug. I wasn't sure what that meant, but I just knew that there was always, like, I was always unsatisfied with, I don't know, facts and figures or just spreadsheets. And you know, the last job I had before I went more towards the creative side was working for a global consultancy as a staff assignment manager. My job was basically to measure utilization rates for consultants. Ooh. On projects. And if you're not sleeping now, I can send you some of the work I did and solve any insomnia problem that you might ever have. But I knew, like, being an Excel jockey was not my future. So I stopped the train. Mm-hmm. I read, like, I guess it was like Rich Dad, Poor Dad or some of these kind of entrepreneurial things. I was about 30 at the time. And I decided to become a copywriter because I could write, you know, always knew mm-hmm. I could write. And I was in Tokyo at the time. So it's, you know, wouldn't be too hard to reinvent myself and just tell people whom I'd never met that, you know, I am a copywriter. And mm-hmm. I have to be honest, I played the native speaker of English card where, you know, you automatically have a little bit of authority and credibility based on mm-hmm. the fact that you're not a Japanese person. So I did leverage that a little bit at the start of my creative career. But I started a company, started just doing copywriting, picking up ad projects, networked the hell out of myself, and met a lot of people who were in that business and gave me some overflow work. Started building a portfolio. Realized pretty quickly that I really enjoyed all of the projects involved with the creative world. Right? The copywriting itself was good, but it wasn't scalable, and also I need variety. So back in those days, I started to do these very nascent web development projects, and I know this is the early 2000s, so very cool stuff was happening in that world. The new rules of marketing and PR was just written.
I remember it well.
You know, and David Meerman Scott, I mean, still one of my idols. And that book is still pertinent.
It is.
So, you know, these kinds of things happen. I eventually started moving more towards general kind of marketing and communications projects. And then I got hired by one of my clients, went corporate, and just have stayed pretty much corporate since then. So for the last, I'd say, it's almost been 16, 17 years, maybe. I've been 100% on the corporate side of marketing and communications. So, you know, I came back to the States about 10-ish years ago, had a couple different roles, ended up at a major agency, got a real taste of what it's like to work inside an agency and serving multiple clients, figured out that wasn't necessarily for me, and then went back to corporate world. And then for the last 6 years, I've been really focused on Japanese companies. And I was the director of marketing communications for a big manufacturer for a couple of years. And now recently I've become the head of the leader for communications and corporate responsibility. So more on the comm side, less on the marketing side for Lixil Americas. So, you know, it's been a meandering career, but I think there's a sort of trajectory there that's gotten me to where I am today.
Yeah, well, the thread of creativity is definitely there, because a lot of people don't necessarily think when they think of teachers creativity, but you and I can both say you need to be pretty creative to be able to connect with, you know, however many different brains and personalities you had in your classrooms. I know I did when I had, you know, 28 students 5 times a day in my classrooms when I was teaching.
Yeah, and you know, I wonder if there's it's not a prerequisite for sure, because lots of creative folks never are teachers or have never been in front of a classroom. But I wonder if teachers who leave the profession and then veer into the world of marketing and communications, into the creative world, have some kind of an advantage in some ways, or maybe it's just sort of ingrained in them, because you have to deal in front of a classroom. You know, you might have a plan, but you have to deal with an audience of immediacy. You have to understand personal feedback loops and constantly. So if you want to be a good teacher and relate to your students, you're constantly optimizing and adjusting on the run, right? You're doing things. And if you don't take a creative approach, well, then you're just going to have a bored and sleepy audience, which is the same thing that happens in your professional career. You know, if you're not creative, it's a sleepy city.
Yeah, that's true. When I knew I was going to leave teaching and I was trying to find a job, which, you know, I ended up getting into marketing and a creative field when I left teaching as well, which is a little bit parallel to yours. But one of the people who was helping me network and said to me, you know, don't sell yourself short. This time that you've spent teaching, you've become a really good manager of managing all these personalities and working independently. You know, I didn't necessarily have a boss to go to ask questions all day long. I had to deal with it as it was happening.
Yeah, for sure. And you don't, like, I didn't realize that until much later.
Yeah, me too.
Much later in my career. And I wish I had grasped that earlier, you know.
Yeah.
It might have given me confidence when I needed it.
So you also talked about one of the things we have in common as well, which I guess is why you and I can talk for days and days, is that you've been in the agency world and you've been in the in-house communications marketing world. I've been in both, but the opposite in the opposite direction as you. I was in more of the larger companies managing creative, doing creative and managing creative in-house, and then I went to the agency world, which was different. And they both have their pros and cons for me. I like the steadiness of working on a couple projects for one main brand and what comes along with that. But I do have to say I did like all the different projects of all the different clients from the agency world. So there's benefits to both.
Well, there are, and I think the most pertinent thing to this whole idea of creativity and creative leadership is that, you know, for me anyway, was during my agency experience. It was a transition from one in-house job to what ultimately became another in-house job, because I thought that I wanted to go to agency and be, you know, like be a, you know, wear a blazer and no tie and jeans and, you know, kind of walk the walk and help
brainstorm
people to
concepts
be,
all day,
you know, yeah, like right, yeah. a lot of whiteboards and PowerPoints.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reality on the ground is that was true too. I did wear blazers and no ties. That did happen. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot, certainly was a lot more challenging than I had bargained for, but it was a lot more chaotic. And where I had not only my biggest challenges, but some of my most rewarding experiences in the agency world was that I was kind of on the leading edge of a new team within the company at the time. Mm-hmm. And we were dealing with, you know, kind of traditionally dry industries. So like I was working with finance, for example, and with some manufacturing firms as my clients. And we were focusing on digital and social and trying to come up with creative executions for some of these, you know, day-to-day problems and issues that our clients had. But we were making things up. I mean, none of this stuff existed at the time. And right. where I would be the interface with the client, I would hear what the client wants. And then I would have to try to translate that into a business case or into a brief that then I could talk to the creative folks about, the pure mm-hmm. creatives. Mm-hmm. Not like I was right in the middle. And yep. I fell on my face so many times and probably made more than a few, I wouldn't say enemies, but certainly people who ran down the hall the opposite direction when they saw me come right. up the elevator. And you know, hey, mea culpa, I really didn't know what I was doing in some ways with that. And you know, especially given the way that the agency world works, you know, I didn't have that education behind me. I hadn't grown up in the agency world. So there was a few things that I was probably, you know, not quite up to speed on, like, you know, how creative teams actually work inside an agency. That would have been right. good to know. But that put me in the middle, and I learned a lot through frustration, some failure, but then through a few successes that, you know, how to better deal with these bigger creative projects.
What you were talking about is a lesson I had to learn over the years of managing creative people too, is that when to bring the actual creative people into the loop of with the client communication and the client meetings, and when to have it be more the account manager. And it's a fine line, because the account manager often has a different type of relationship with the client than the creatives have. And it's not that that's good or bad. It's just that on some accounts and in some agency environments, that's just how it is.
Yeah, totally. And when the account manager doesn't understand that, or mm-hmm. the creatives don't understand that, mm-hmm. then you run into some issues. You know, now right. that I'm, after I left that, the agency experience, moved in-house, now I have a very different view of how I am supposed to interact or how I should interact with my agency partners and my internal creative teams.
Hmm. You know?
And a lot of that is, it's really about communication, to be frank. I mean, it's like,
right.
if there's one big, there's a lot of C words involved with what we do. There's clarity, communication, creativity, curiosity, all these great things. But that communication point is so critical when you are dealing with creative people. And especially when you're kind of in a hybrid environment where, like, I have a team now of six, including me. We all have a certain level of creativity in our work. Primarily, mm-hmm. it's writing. There could be some video. We do some ad hoc video production, you know, on our team, but not at that kind of super professional level. It's more about like social media level, that kind of like super quick cut videos. But mm-hmm. you know, and then event planning, event creation, all these different creative executions. But mm-hmm. we have to work with, and we have to have really good relationships with certain agencies mm-hmm. that really can focus in and do, you know, do real creative direction, creative production, you know, come up with amazing ideas that we can then say yay or nay, you know, the whole routine. So in this environment, you know, it's been, I've had to take a different look at the way I tackle these topics than I had at the agency. And the agency certainly helped me get there.
Yeah, the agency world is a good boot camp for dealing with different types of people, especially if it was the agency you were in, a smaller agency?
I was in the world's largest agency. I was at Edelman. Right. It's on my profile. Mm-hmm. Everybody who knows me knows I was at Edelman, and I still have dear friends and dear connections. And from that universe, I am forever blessed. I mean, just mm-hmm. some of my career went the way it went because of my time at Edelman. And yeah. I'm forever grateful and indebted to everybody there. But that's where I was. And I just, you know, experimentation was part of the culture to a point, right? Mm-hmm. To a point. At some point, you have to really deliver. It depends on who your clients are and all, a lot of variables there.
It's funny because I feel the same way about the agency that kind of put my career on the path that it has been on for the past 20 years. And that was a medical communications agency. And what that job taught me was, which was really pivotal for me and gave me the confidence to start my own business, was I realized that I was good at that communication piece between, we had brilliant medical affairs groups, we had brilliant editorial writers, we had my department, which was the art department, there were account department, there was a meetings department, I mean, so many different people. And what I realized was I was good at getting everybody to understand what my team needed, and getting my team to the point where they can understand what they could, the limits of the creative, and how to push it in a way that was going to break through.
Sure.
Which was kind of a big thing for me. And that's when I said, okay, there's a business here that I think I can do this creative side of it and have a clientele of healthcare and medical communications clients, because I was able to bridge that gap.
So important. You know, had I known what I know now, I'm sure that my time at Edelman would have been a little bit different. You have to go through these experiences to learn. And the mindset changes as you get older and as you have different experiences, you know. So, you know, whereas, you know, if you're young, you know, when I was younger and in this particular role, I thought that I was the boss and making the orders and making things happen. And you got to listen to me, people, because I've got the client. So I represent the client. You got to listen to me. But that's not the way things work ever, right? It's never about me. It's never about you. It's about the entirety of the project. It's about getting to a solution for your client. It's about doing the best thing for them. But it's also about recognizing the talent, skills, and contributions of everybody who has to contribute to the project. You know, so as soon as one head gets higher than the others, it can be a little bit problematic, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how do you, as a leader of creative teams, and it sounds like an interface with other creatives that aren't even on your team,
sure,
that are the part of the agencies that you leverage, how do you balance that, being creative, allowing the ideation to happen and allowing the ideas to grow and really reach the best of what they can be, while you're managing deadlines and budgets? It's always a challenge, I know, but that's something I think is different in the creative world than it necessarily is in a lot of other business units. So talk about that. How do you manage that?
Sure. First, I just want to go back real quick, because you mentioned that I manage a creative team, but also these other agencies and these different relationships. I consider the whole thing the creative team, right? When I look at the role that I'm in and the deliverables or the things that I'm responsible or my team is responsible to deliver, you know, I think it's fundamentally a mistake to treat an agency partner like a vendor or like an external organ. You know, you gotta bring them in, right? That's not to say I'm perfect in this regard. Of course, sometimes you get dissatisfied with something that's going on. And, you know, sometimes you have to say, well, you know, after all, they aren't us, they're external. So then the relationship changes and gets tested. But while you're working with an agency and you find a good agency partner, you want to keep them on board and you're doing great work, you know, it's got to be a partnership and they're part of the team. So, you know, that's the first thing. But once that's all in place, then balancing the creativity with the business needs is a constant struggle, but it has to be laid out at the beginning of any engagement. And I've learned that the more information you have at the beginning is probably the key to the success at the end. And when you are, you know, if you're the point person and or if you're in a meeting where you're collecting all this information, you have to ask a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And to be able to predict what those questions, what those questions are going to be is important, but also when you are hearing the vision that you're trying to translate into a creative execution, because a lot of the job is translator, right? You mm-hmm. You're hearing mm-hmm. something that your client, definitely. Your internal client, in my case, it's the executive team, or it could be a business unit within the organization. You know, the HR team needs something, the finance team needs something, our regional leader needs something, or has an idea. They'll come to us and say, "Hey, we have this idea. How do we make this a reality?" Or, "You guys are the storytellers. What are the points that I need to be bringing in here? And can we weave a story around this?" I love that. I love that they call us the storytellers and they look at us this way as partners. It's a real kind of, I think it's a real mark of an advanced organization or at mm-hmm. least open-minded leadership, which I love. But still, you know, when you're at that beginning part of, you know, "Hey, I have an idea." When you hear that, mm-hmm. I'm not saying the alarm bells should go up, but as soon as you one of your internal clients says, "Oh yeah, I have an idea," then that's the time when you say, "Well, let's sit down and talk about it." And you, ideally, I think we're getting to the point where we really need a solid brief, some kind mm-hmm. of a process in place. So you have to balance the creative with the process. You mm-hmm. have to have your right and left brains working at the same time. You got to have them both in place. So you know, earlier in the career, maybe, or if you're in a position where you're really aiming to please, being a pleaser is very problematic when you're trying to make creative executions happen. Mm-hmm. So that I think is one way to get that balance is approach it like you're not a pleaser. Approach it with a very realistic view and be prepared to ask a ton of questions. At the same time, when you're in the front of the project, and you are just trying to figure out what it is that you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. How are you going to translate this idea? Is it going to be a story? Is it going to be a video? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be a simple image with social copy? Whatever it is. At that point, you absolutely have to clarify what the resources are that are available to you. And it really helps to have enough industry experience. Mm-hmm. And enough expertise to be able to tell your internal client, say, "Okay, that's a very interesting project. You realize that this is going to cost, you know, X amount of dollars." And obviously, the way things are set up can vary. You know, sometimes the project will come out of my team's budget. Sometimes it'll come out of the client team's budget. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to have enough information. So always going in from a position of knowledge and being able to, you know, kind of realistically guide your client to a realistic position is really important.
Yeah.
And if you get that part right, then the balance kind of happens. You know, it's not to say things don't creep all over the place or, you know, things don't have, you know, there's always something happens, but you got to get that upfront part right.
Yeah, I remember times when I didn't get that upfront part right. So I agree 100%. And I think that's a really great reminder is to really ask those questions, do that upfront work, have a good brief. I've also been bitten by, you know, having a really good brief, but then my team coming up with a stellar idea halfway through that could change the game a little bit. And what do you do there? Do you ask for the more budget? Do you make it just happen? Do you ignore the really great idea to stay on? It's a challenge. It can be a real challenge depending on what the issue is.
Well, don't you think that that's where your relationship with the client is the key?
Yeah.
So the one thing we haven't talked about yet is, you know, that balance between the creativity and the business side, it's made a lot easier. It's easier to manage that if you are in a very positive and enabling mm-hmm. and I guess authentic relationship with whomever the client is. And, you know, in my case, like I said, it's our executives or, you know, some of our internal business units, keeping those relationships like warm mm-hmm. and making sure that They know, they have visibility into what we're doing. I mean, it's so important to just keep informing people around you of, you know, the work that's happening. And I don't, not in the way of, oh my gosh, we spent 45 hours this week on this particular, you know, oh, like, no. I mean, you know, the big picture projects that stretch across an organization. But there's a lot of dots that have to keep connecting, and there will be attrition among those dots, or they'll atrophy, maybe. Atrophy is maybe a better word, if you don't pay attention to them. So, you know, it's like muscles, you know, you have to keep exercising them or they will go away. Same thing with relationships. So, you know, if you have that kind of relationship, then, so that kind of situation where you're in the middle of a project and your team or your partners, or, you know, basically somebody on your extended creative team just says, wait a second, what if we, right? And as soon as you get that what if, then it's a matter of, okay, are we so far down that, you know, we're stretched for budget, or is this one of these things where we simply don't have the time to entertain the question? And that could be the case.
That happens, right? sometimes, too.
Got to measure those constraints, time, money, people. So if one of those constraints is, you know, is preventing you from answering that what if question, you have to be upfront about it and say, we can't do that now. But let's put that aside and put that in the parking lot, wherever, whatever the, you know, the your bin of future ideas,
right,
so that you can you can go back to it, because you should keep those ideas. They tend to come back. But you know, if it's one of these things where, you know, it's a big project, you have a lot of runway, you have time, you have good relationships, then you not only should kind of dig into that new idea, you owe it to your client, to your internal client, to bring it to them. Say, look, another option has just come up and I want to bring it to you.
Right.
You know, and sometimes you have to make the call.
Yeah. But if the relationship is solid, they're going to, and they appreciate what you do to begin with, that's why they came to you, then they're going to appreciate that, to be able to have that option to make that decision. Like, okay, I know this is something unexpected, but hey, this could be really great. Or nope, that's not worth it to what it's going to do to the budget or timeline. We got to keep on going, but thanks for bringing it up.
Exactly. There, you know, you're never going to get penalized for bringing a new idea, you know, if you haven't spent the money yet.
Right. That's true. That's the key. So, yeah.
as long as you don't do it, you know, too often, I think you want to make sure that you're on solid ground when you propose an idea and you start to carry through those ideas. You know, you want to have a good record of delivery with your clients, that you have the integrity and the trust built, that when you do want to shift or change your ideas, they're very receptive to it.
So Dan, tell me what it takes to really nurture creativity in the individuals on your team. I know that it's a constant thing that we all work on. Your creatives work on it, your teams work on it. But as a leader, is there any advice you could give for helping, you know, when you do lead creative or have those people on your team, how to help them do their best work?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I think a lot of what we do to help our people be more creative or to nurture that creativity almost feels like common sense. Like, why haven't we been doing this the whole time? It's not like a big secret. But the very first thing, I think, is to refrain from slapping people down. You know, maybe there's a better way to say that. I think the worst thing that creative people want to experience is rejection. And, you know, you're a leader of a team or you're the new manager or something, and the first thing you do is you sit in a meeting and somebody says, you know, what if we something, again, the what if question, what if we send something, and you say, you know, we can't do that because, right? You put on the black hat and you say, we don't, you know, we can't do that.
Right.
I think that is to be avoided at all costs if you want to nurture creativity among your team. Now, there's always going to be ideas that are not realistic.
Right.
But that's a different story. So you really need to go with the mindset that there really are no bad ideas at all, that creative people need to get that out. Right? They have a need to talk it through. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't counter an idea.
Right.
Right? So on the one hand, you know, steering away from rejection, but on the other hand, getting into a dialogue. I think that helps your creative team and the people that you're working with. A, they feel appreciated, their ideas have been acknowledged, but it also, you know, gives, I think it makes them feel valued because their idea is not only being acknowledged, but now we're adding to it. Now we're shaping it. Now it's inspired you in some way. And even an idea that might not fly should inspire you in some way to go in a direction or to think of something new. So point out how that's happening. You know, be very open about how somebody's idea has helped to shape your thinking.
Definitely.
So it's another trust building exercise, really. Like you're working with your team to build that trust. And you know, you hear a lot these days about the safe space idea, right? You're actually, what you're doing is you're creating a safe space for people to share their ideas. And that is like probably a number one most important thing, is that people feel safe and comfortable to share their ideas.
Otherwise they won't.
Otherwise
and
they
you'll
will
miss
not.
The opportunity, and, right.
Yeah, or and you'll get resentment. You'll lose a lot of the creative power that's on your team. You know, another thing is that, you know, everybody's very, very different. And I know from my time in various roles in my career, if you're on a team of salespeople, if you're on a team of marketers, if you're on a team of analytic people, you know, there are variety among the staff and among the people that you're with in terms of the way that they perform or what motivates them. But when you're talking about creative people, there's, I think, a wider degree of difference among your people, especially in what they are comfortable doing, what they have specific talents or capabilities to do. So discovering those skills and capabilities within your people, whether you do assessments to make that happen, or whether it's through their work product, or giving them the room to experiment and say, hey, you know, in this, the next 3 months or the next 6 months, make it part of their performance program. Find a project that you really want to work on and go for it, right? So find out where their strengths are and where their particular creative strengths are and nurture those for sure. But not to the extent that that's the only thing they do, because creative people are also, I think, by nature, susceptible to boredom. So, you know, we've got to give a variety of tasks and kind of, you know, responsibilities or projects for people to do, you know. It's always a challenge, you know, when you're talking with, when you're managing or leading creative people. And, the other thing is you have to be one of those people yourself, right? I think it's harder for somebody without any creative experience or background to lead a creative team. I'm not saying it doesn't get done. I'm sure that there are plenty of people who do a great job.
Sure.
But from my perspective, you know, if I can, you know, every once in a while reestablish my credibility as a creative person, it helps with the team to know that I'm part of what they do and I understand what they do. Another very important thing about managing a creative team or leading a creative team is to be conscious of the organization that you are within, because your corporate or organizational culture is going to have a direct effect on how far or how close your team can go. And, you know, ideally, you're in a situation where your organization wants them to be creative. And if your organization does not value that creativity, then you need to become an advocate for it.
Right.
And maybe it won't work out for everybody. Maybe, you know, you'll see attrition on the team, or maybe you won't get the kind of creative work you want. And that then starts to come down to the organizational culture. I know that at Lixil, we have, as one of our foundational behaviors, is experiment and learn. And as I go through my first year here, and as I work with my team, that experimenting and learning is extremely important and very valuable. And in fact, the team and not just my team, but other people from across the organization, often, like, I rarely hear somebody say, oh man, I shouldn't have done that. That was a terrible thing to do. I always hear people say, look, we're experimenting and learning. So what have we learned?
Love that.
Right? It's taking that learning mindset rather than that fixed mindset and institutionalizing it. And that's always a good thing.
Yeah, that makes it safe for people to take calculated risks and not feel like they're not making a difference. So, I love that. Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom with my listeners today. This was definitely a fun conversation. But before we wrap up, let my listeners know how they can find out more about you.
Well, absolutely. Thanks, Michael. I am, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. And I love talking with you. You know, we've now had a couple conversations over the past year or so, and always met, you know, it's always a rewarding experience. I just want to thank you for that. Thank you for taking me through the assessments earlier as well. And I'm having a great time talking with you. But the best places to find me, of course, you can look for me on LinkedIn, just Daniel Nessel. There might be more than one of me, but I'm easy to find. I am also on Twitter as DS Nessel. I'm also on Instagram, DS Nessel, Facebook, DS Nessel. Anywhere there's a DS Nessel is probably me. Finally, you can find me at the Dan Nessel Show. It's my podcast. I publish weekly or biweekly, depending on how I'm feeling that month. the Dan Nessel Show, look for it wherever podcasts are available.
It's a great show. I definitely recommend you all check it out.
Well, you've been on it, man. I think it's even better for you having been on it.
Awesome. Well, I feel the same about you and being on my show. So thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it, Dan.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for this episode of the Leadership Communication Show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you think this show can help other people you know, please tell them about it too. To learn more about me and my work, head over to my websites at michaelpiperno.com and wearecomvia.com. While you're there, be sure to check out all of the leadership communication tips and tricks I share on my blogs. See you next time. The Leadership Communication Show is brought to you by the Comvia Group, your source for leadership communication and workplace relationships coaching and training. Visit wearecomvia, that's wearecomvia.com to learn more.